Elizabeth Elliot says, "If you dwell on your own feelings about things, rather than dwelling on the faithfulness, the love, and the mercy of God, then you're likely to have a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. But dwelling on the faithfulness and the love and the mercy of God is always safe," she says. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of challenge and commitment. Here's your friend, Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, continuing the story today of John and Betty Stamm. We left off where John Stamm had decided to leave business. He felt the call of God to go into missionary service or Christian work of some sort, and he went to Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. And it was there that he had the opportunity to test the faithfulness of God in the matter of money. The faculty had very high opinions of this new student. They said he had an arresting personality and unusual Christian character, Christian mind, the bearing of a university-trained man. One faculty member said he will undoubtedly be heard from. Of course, he was not a university-trained man. He decided that he was not going to accept any money from his parents. He had saved enough money when he was in business to take care of the first 2 years at Moody, but he was not going to accept help from his parents. So he was eager to work his way as far as possible. He served tables 3 times a day when 800 or 900 students took their meals together, and with so much success that later on he was actually made the superintendent of the dining hall and even of the kitchen. This was strenuous work, but it didn't bring very much in the way of financial returns. Time was occupied with assignments and study. He couldn't find a more remunerative position. And so he had the very thing that he desired in going to Chicago, which was opportunity to prove to himself the reality of prayer and the dependability of the promises of God. Later on, when he became a missionary in China, he wrote of his first Christmas at the Bible Institute. A fellow student from Patterson who was driving home for the holidays had offered him a seat in his car, but the journey would be cold, and John's finances were low. "I had told Tom I was going with him," he wrote, "but I didn't have any money, and couldn't even buy a warm pair of socks for the trip home in the car. Then one night, I pulled on one of the 4 shirts I had been planning to take home with me, and it ripped. I didn't want to take home a mended shirt, for Mother would guess that finances were low, and I did want to see the Lord's provision as a test of what His care would be in times to come. I went out by the lake, feeling a bit blue and downcast, and found myself thinking, well, it's all right to trust the Lord, but I wouldn't mind having a few dollars in my pocket. Like a flash, I could have kicked myself to think that I was valuing a few dollars in my pocket above the Lord's ability to provide 1 million if I needed it. A few minutes later, just as I was crossing Michigan Boulevard, and jaywalking too, which one is not supposed to do, I picked up a $5 bill from the street. Oh, what a rebuke it was from the Lord! Just one of those gentle rebukes the Lord can so wonderfully give us. The $5 was beautifully acceptable, even though it was wet. I dried it out, and next day visited Montgomery Ward's bargain counter and bought a couple of shirts and a good warm pair of socks, just the thing for the trip. I'm wearing those same socks still, and every time I pull them on these cold nights, they preach a sermon on the Lord's wonderful power to provide, whatever my needs may be." His father had hoped that John would work with him in the Star of Hope mission. But then, gradually, he began to pray that God's will would be accomplished in that son, perhaps even that he would be a missionary in China. Now, China was a very dangerous place in 1930, and 3 members of the China Inland Mission had been killed in that year, and 2 had been taken captive. Yet John felt that God was calling him for China, and so he was beginning to prepare himself to be a missionary there. Now, far from Chicago, in another home, the home of Dr. Charles Ernest Scott, a daughter was born, whom they named Elizabeth. She was called Betty, born in Albion, Michigan, when her parents were missionaries, but home on furlough. They then went to China. To give you an idea of the routine in the Scott home, let me read from this book, The Triumph of John and Betty Stamm. Our family motive was, do it together. At 11 o'clock every morning, no matter how busy Father might be, and he was busy, we all ran out and played hard at running games in the open air until midday dinner, even Mother often sharing with us. After breakfast, we had family prayers, each child choosing in turn the songs we sang, and taking turns also in praying. Father believed firmly in the value of athletics, and for a long time we used to do exercises together as soon as we were up in the morning, my brother blowing a trumpet to wake us. After early supper, we had a reading hour when Mother and Father read to us from beautifully illustrated children's books. Everyone was required to lie down after dinner, and dinner, you remember, was at noon, even when we were well grown. So all day long, we were doing things together, and as there were scarcely any children of our own age within 3 miles of us, a strong family spirit developed. One by one, the children followed Betty to the coeducational school at Tung Chau, where their studies were pursued for some years. Her sister writes, "As I remember Betty then, she was a gay, laughing, clever girl with several boy admirers and many good friends among the girls. To me, the little sister, she was tender and thoughtful, and I recall many Sunday afternoons when we wandered around the campus with arms about each other, talking of home and school interests. We went home at Christmas and also every summer, when the family migrated to our cottage at Pei Tai Ho, another resort at the seashore. There, we spent most of the time swimming, playing tennis, reading, and acting as secretaries to Daddy, who was always loaded with work." All five of the Scots expected to return to China as missionaries. Betty Scott went back to the States to Wilson College in Pennsylvania. I had a letter from a lady who was a student at Wilson at the same time. She wrote this. She said, "Betty impressed me the most and is the only one I remember. She wore her hair then in braids neatly around her head. She had about 2 white blouses that she wore with a dark skirt. Her manner was gentle, calm, with a quiet voice. It was at Moody Bible Institute in Chicago that John Stamm noticed in this girl something that he had never found before, something that strangely attracted him. But his primary concerns were his studies and his weekend travels to preach in a church 200 miles away. His feelings for this lovely woman were held so firmly in check that fellow students saw nothing." Betty had assumed that she would return to China as a missionary. But at Moody, the continent of Africa came before her, and especially the sufferings of lepers. Could she be willing to relinquish all that China meant and consecrate her life to service elsewhere? Her attention had been drawn also to the tall figure of John Stamm, whose call to China was clear. The pull in that direction certainly must have been powerful. "My testimony" is the title that she gives to some lines that reveal not only her quite human and natural fear, but also the gentle reassurance that she received when she expressed that fear to the Lord. This is her poem. "And shall I fear that there is anything that men hold dear, thou wouldst deprive me of, and nothing give in place? That is not so, for I can see thy face and hear thee now. My child, I died for thee. And if the gift of love and life you took from me, shall I one precious thing withhold? One beautiful and bright, one pure and precious thing withhold? My child, it cannot be. Betty Scott's faith was rooted in the love of God. And she loved her family. She loved her brothers and sisters as well. And she loved fun. And she wrote a poem, which I think you children that are listening to me will enjoy. It's called A Jingle of Words. Don't you love the common words in usage all the time? Words that paint a masterpiece, words that beat a rhyme, words that sing a melody, words that leap and run, words that sway a multitude or stir the heart of one. Don't you love the lively words, flicker, leap, and flash, tumble, stumble, pitch and toss, dive and dart and dash, scramble, pirouette and prance, hurtle, hurdle, fling, waddle, toddle, trot and dance, soar and snatch and swing? Don't you love the lengthy words, subterranean, artificial, propagate, Neapolitan, revelation, elevate, ambidextrous, undenominational, simultaneous? Don't you love the noisy words, clatter, pop, and bang, scrape, and creak, and snarl, and snort, crash, and clash, and clang, crackle, cackle, yowl, and yap, snicker, snare, and sneeze, screech, and bellow, slash, and howl, whistle, whine, and wheeze? Don't you love the colorful, amber, rose, and gold, orchid, orange, and cerise, crimson, emerald, purple, plum, and lavender, peach, and Prussian blue, turquoise, matrix, jade, and jet, hazel, honeydew? Yes, with just the common words in usage everywhere, you can capture incidents beautiful and rare. In words, you have a weapon more mighty than a gun. You can sway the multitude or stir the heart of one. We'll go on with the story of John and Betty Stamm tomorrow.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.